Okay, we're in the Gemara Makkos Gimel Amud Aleph, and I'm just going to review the last Mishnah. Erez did it with you, and he began the Gemara, but it's very hard, and I don't know if you got there in your review. Did you get there in your review on Shabbos?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Okay, so I think we're going to do that. So, let's go over again more cases where we can't exactly do to the witnesses exactly. We've had so far missions that you can't do exactly to the witnesses. So why is this thing still frozen? Okay, as he says, the next two missions discuss case in which the reciprocal hazama penalty is in effect, but its application presents a problem. The difficulty is how to assess the damage that the accused would have suffered had the testimony of his own even been allowed to stand. Okay, here's the case. Me'idim anu es ish ploni shegiresh es ishto. Two witnesses testify that this man divorced his wife. Ve'lo nasan la ksuva, and had not yet paid out her ksuva. Okay, so now, and the person is denying it. What's he denying? He can deny a number of things.
Yeah.
He can deny, number one, he never divorced the wife. He can deny, I paid the ksuva. Two things, right? They're saying, now, obviously, how can we know, how can they, now you think about this, how can they testify that he didn't pay the ksuva? You can only testify what you see. You can't testify what you don't see.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
So all they can really testify is he divorced the wife. What do you mean?
How did you know he divorced his wife?
They said the two of us saw him give his wife a divorce. They can say that. They can even lie about that. You know, you can lie about something that happens, right? And therefore, the husband is required to. Now, how do we know the husband didn't pay? The husband's non-payment is known by virtue of what's the man claiming of his claim that he did not divorce his wife.
So then the witness are false.
No. If two witnesses say that you're a murderer and the guy says no, that means the witnesses are false?
You don't know.
Okay, Sammy, we got to go back to the basics here. When two witnesses go into a court and make a claim against someone and the person denies it, we listen to the witnesses. We don't listen to the guy.
In this case, they got nothing to lose. They maybe they carry a grudge against the guy and they say, no, he never divorced his wife.
Sammy,
then they're going to be false
according
witnesses.
To Jewish law, when two witnesses testify, it's gold. It's the Bezdin's job to question them and interrogate them to figure out that they're authentic. All these cases, the Bezdin has questioned them, and they said, this is what happened, and as far as it. Now, the guy says, I didn't do it. You always listen to the witnesses. That's all there is to it. Okay? Now, how do we know he didn't pay? By virtue of his claim that he did not divorce his wife, which is tantamount to the admission that he did not pay her the ksuva.
Yeah,
okay? All right? That's Rashi, as explained by the Oracle in there. What?
If he did not divorce her, there's nothing to pay.
If he's...
It's logical.
Okay, right.
If two witnesses say Reuven divorced his wife, they're believed in court. Finished.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know. We're so used to crime and dishonesty, you don't even allow the beginning step to happen. The beginning step to happen. Let's get this clear. I don't want to go this over every time we do a mission about this. Two witnesses say, and the Bezdin interrogates them, that's it. What they say is true. Okay, what they say is true. Doesn't matter if the defendant screams to... Now, if he can bring two witnesses to counter that, that's another story. But he didn't. He didn't. And they said he divorced her. And the guy says, I did not divorce her. Okay, fine, you know. But still, there is a ksuva obligation. Now, how do we know he didn't pay it? Because he said, I didn't divorce her. So then, obviously, he's saying I didn't divorce her, and of course I didn't pay her. But if they said you divorced her, and you're admitting that you didn't pay her, then he's got to pay. That's all there is to it. All right? Now, Rashi does not explain that the non-payment ksuva was itself part of the witness's testimony, because generally witnesses are incapable of testifying as to what did not occur. Perhaps the husband paid when they were not present. Okay, in this context, the term ksuva refers to the sum total of the husband's financial obligations towards his wife in case the marriage should dissolve. These obligations are written into the ksuva document include the basic statutory amount of 200 zuz for a virgin and, it should be, or 100 zuz for a widow or a divorcee, in addition to any supplementary amount voluntarily assumed by the husband, which is called tosefes ksuva. He could say, I love her so much, I want to give her more. Okay? Now, there's other things, though. The value of the wife's tzon barzel property. Did Eris talk about that with you? This last category is defined as follows. When a woman marries, she may ask to have her dowry, the property she brings into the marriage, assessed and its value written into the ksuva. Mm-hmm. Let's say it's a $1,000 piece of land. She owns it from before. She says, I want it written into the ksuva. It's a one. Now, obviously, whatever she owns, the husband's going to take care of, right? If this is done, those possessions become known as Nichsei Tzon Barzel, literally iron sheep property. The husband assumes the responsibility of remunerating their full value as assessed at the time of the ksuva as written in the event of his death or their divorce. In other words, if he died, it goes back to her. Right. Now, what does she get back? Not just the field. It's what it was worth when she got married. That's the stipulation that's put into the ksuva. See, they're writing the ksuva, she's bringing in a property worth $1,000. Now, should the man die? Should he divorce her? Well, the land's going back to her. At what value?
$1,000.
Let's say he wrecks up the property. Well, then he's got to supplement that with more money, whatever. Thus, the possession's value of the wife is fixed and is not affected by consumption, loss, or price fluctuation. They are like sheep made of iron. Why do they call that funny name? So it was customary for shepherds to accept sheep in this manner, to appraise the flock and assume responsibility for it. Those properties were given the appellative iron sheep. Okay.
But what happens if the property is now worth a lot more?
Well, she's still... Well, then he gets the...
He gets the benefit. He only has to give it back a
That's what the guarantee.
An apple orchard and expand it, yes.
Additionally, a wife may also own at the time of property that she wishes to retain for herself. In other words, she doesn't want it. Next, it's home barzel. She's saying, I let the husband own it as long as we're married.
Right.
But if she dies first, then he keeps it.
Right.
But if he dies for divorce, it now goes back to her. But now it's like, it's almost like he bought it, almost. But he's got to give it back as he got it. But this, the other one, is she wants to keep it for herself. She never wants it to go to the husband. She brings it in, says, I don't want you to have it. I want to have it. But you'll take care of it. The value of these possessions is not requiring ksuva. By law, the husband has the right to the produce of these properties for the duration of the marriage, but they revert to the wife in whatever condition they may be at the end of divorce. Event of divorce, death of a husband. This separation is known as Nichsei Malog. Malog means to pluck. Property, Malog property, insufructuary property.
Usufruct.
Whatever.
Usufruct.
Yeah, so what does that mean?
Usufruct means the right of enjoyment.
Okay.
You enjoy the fruits of the property.
Must be Latin, no?
It is Latin.
Oh. Yeah. Okay. It's so designated because the husband enjoys its dividends but has no rights to the property itself, analogous to plucking the feathers of a fowl which leaves the bird itself intact. This type of property is not considered part of the ksuva. It's not part of the ksuva because she always owns it. It emerged, therefore, in that in attempting to have the husband pay the ksuva, when these guys are lying, right, the witnesses were endeavoring to have him pay the basic 1 or 200 zuz in addition to any supplementary amount, and the value of the tzon barzel property. Tzon barzel, because he really has it. when she gives it, he has it. The nichse malog, he doesn't have it. It's hers. He's just able to use it. The nichse tzom parzel, he has it, right? Okay, now if he divorces her, now he has to give it back. The other nichse malog, she always had it. There was no issue. But the nichse tzom barzel, he has them. He owns them. The only thing is, if he dies, where is it? Now it goes back. So that's what he said. So these guys are effectively want him to lose the payout. And if there's nichse tzon barzel, which might be there. All right, so that's what they want him to lose. So you would have thought simply, let's keep it simple now. Let's say all there is a ksuva of $200, to keep it simple. So it's, and they're, if, and then we find out they're lying, right? The Besdin, here's the testimony. It says, well, according to what they're saying, you owe her, you are divorced, you have to pay her 200 zuz. Right. Then come the second set of witnesses and prove the first witness is liars. Mm-hmm. Now, what do they got to pay? So you'd think, pay the $200 ksuva. Not so fast. This is where it becomes, this is the why we have the Mishnah here, because that's not so simple. Because what in effect could the witnesses say in their defense of not paying the full $200? They're going to say, fellow Bein Hayom, doesn't matter, either today, Ubein Lamachar, or tomorrow, Sofa Litin Leksuva. You're eventually going to have to give her a ksuva, because sooner or later, you're going to die or divorce her. Hold on. So therefore, you can't consider us that we made you lose the entire value of the ksuva. Now, of course, what do we mean now? Well, let's now figure, what is the ksuva worth now? You have a ksuva worth now. And we'll see there's two ways of looking at this. Now, the Mishnah now gives a very ambiguous explanation of what it's worth now. And that's why the Gemara is going to debate what the ambiguous statement means. So we'll read the ambiguous statement and make no attempt to clarify it right now till we go into the Gemara, that we'll have a machlokas as what the clarification is. But one thing's for sure, the man can't say, well, you know, if it wasn't for you guys, if you'd lie and say, I stole money from somebody, well, you clearly are making me lose $200. Right. But here, they're not clearly making him lose $200, because sooner or later, he might have to pay the full amount, and then they can say, we didn't make you lose anything, because sooner or later you would have had to pay it. On the other hand, he'll say, but I didn't have to pay it now. Okay, so now what loss were they creating for him? Well, anything of what its value is now. Now the question is, what's the value of a ksuva now? Now you're going to wonder, what are you talking about? It has no value. No, it does have value, because there is something you can sell, no different than stocks. Yeah. Now what? Well, let's see who can sell what. That we'll discuss. But anyway, we'll just say the not clear statement. Omdim, we assess the following. Kama adam roitze litein b'ksuva shozu. How much would a person in the open market be willing to pay now for the speculation of this ksuva right now? What's the speculation? She imnis almana, if this woman will be widowed, where her husband will die, onis garsha, or if she gets divorced, okay, that what happens then? The husband pays out the full value of the ksuva. Well, whatever. The imesa, while if she would die first before Yirashena Bala, the husband will inherit her and will never have to pay the ksuva amount at all.
Right.
So that becomes the speculation. Now the question is, well, what exactly is that speculation? Okay, and the question is, what is it? In other words, what could we sell on the open market? Well, what can you sell? So right now you think, oh, I guess the only thing I could sell is the ksuva. Who could sell the ksuva? The woman could sell the ksuva. All right. Now, so let's say the woman sells, she has a 200 zuz ksuva.
Right.
Okay. Now she go to the, she, let's say she wants, she's not planning on getting divorced, but she wants some of her, she wants some of her own cash. Okay. So what could she can go to a stranger and say, okay, my 200 zuz ksuva, How much are you willing to pay for it? How much are you willing to pay for it? He says, well, what do you mean? Well, you know, my husband's 89 years old, and I'm 26.
I knew that was going.
Okay. He should live to 120, but even then, I'm still going to be around. So, so if he dies, I got a ksuv, I got 200 zuz. Now I know you're not getting the 200 zuz today. Wait a minute. What if you die first and I get nothing? Okay, well that's called the risk. Okay, how much willing to pay? So, well, it's that's a low risk. What if he's 30 and she's 30? Okay, whatever. So obviously there's things you have. So let's just, for the sake of all things being equal, let's say all things being equal. So let's say a guy would say, all right, you know, let's go with $100 ksuvah. So the numbers are easier. It's $100. $100 ksuvah. Says, okay, I'll give you $40 for it. You know, we could debate. Let's just say $40. Okay, so I'll give you $40 for that. That still doesn't help us, because what were they trying to make the husband lose? To lose the value of what it's worth now, but that's what she—that's what she owns, not what he owns. That's where the problem is. That's the problem. So if we're going to have to take it another step, and that—that's the problem with the wording of this Mishnah. The way it's worded, it's difficult. So what do you tell me? This ksuva, if she wants to sell the ksuva, she gets $40. What does that have to do with the husband? Yeah. The husband who had to pay it out. So that's the issue. How does that resolve the issue? No, it's saying what she can sell it for, but not him.
Eris described it.
Not what he is losing now. Not what he is losing now.
Yeah. Eris described an option.
So now let's continue. Now that's the problem of the Mishnah, right? Here it is. Simply understood, the Mishnah means that we evaluate what a buyer would pay the woman for the right to collect her ksuva settlement in the event that she is divorced or widow. Yeah. How this amount is a fair representation, what the Zomim witnesses would have caused us to lose, and therefore what they have to pay, is not apparent. That's the point. It's not apparent. You just know what her value is. If they'd be testifying against her somehow to make her lose a ksuva, then it would be fine. What if they testified falsely? Let's like this. Let's say Misha doesn't discuss it. What if they falsely testify she had an adulterous relationship? You tell me, what's the law? If we know for a fact that your wife has an adulterous relationship, what's the halacha? You divorce her and she loses the ksuva. Now what if we find them to be liars?
Can't give two punishments.
Okay. No. There was no warnings. She gets divorced, but clearly, what were they going to make her lose? The value of the ksuva. How much? Well, how much? That would, I guess, depend on what it's worth.
Right.
That evaluation would fit in, but that's what she owned. Mm-hmm. Husband doesn't own the ksuva. The question is, how much would we have to pay?
Either.
So I'm saying, but so therefore, this alone doesn't help us know what the man would have lost. You understand? Where's the man's worth in here? We don't know anything yet. We don't know what her value of her ksuv is. So how does that help us know what they were damaging the husband? You understand the problem? We understand that the ksuva has a fluctuating value over here. But what does that have to do with the husband? That's what's bothering the Gemara. The Gemara needs further explanation. So the cryptic nature of the Mishnah makes it difficult to understand.
But if there's no light...
If there's no what?
They lied. There's zoning. They lied. Mm-hmm. If they lied, there's no divorce.
First of all, doesn't matter.
What?
It doesn't matter. They wanted to make the man lose money.
And then they were proven to be liars.
What is the law of aiding zoning? We do to them what they wanted to do. What they wanted to do.
Right.
And what did they want to do? Make the guy lose money. So now they lose money.
Wait a minute. No. He wouldn't lose money because he gets a divorce. He doesn't have to pay.
I'm going back to our Mishnah now, right? Our Mishnah, if they were divorced, he would have to pay. If they were divorced, he would have...
If he had an affair...
You're mixing up the cases, Sammy. You're mixing up the case.
The witnesses are for the affair.
I was giving you a case that's not in our Mishnah.
Okay.
That's not in our Mishnah. And not in our Mishnah. They lied and said she had an adulterous affair. Fine. And guess what? If they're proven to be a liar, they'd still have to pay because they wanted her to lose the value of her ksuva. Okay. And they would have to pay it.
Right, but they were proven false.
And therefore they have to pay it because that's the law of Edim Zomim. You do to them what they wanted to do. That's the whole law of Edim Zomim. You're right, it never happened. But the truth is, but they wanted to make that problem, so that's the Torah says we punish them. God, again, they say he stole $200 from him. It turns out they didn't. What the law? They got to pay it. That's the law of Edim Zomim. So now, they can't make him divorce her. If the guy says, what? Okay, I don't know. I'm not going there. I'm getting too far flung over. All I was trying to prove is that the value to Ksuva doesn't appear to tell us what they made the man lose.
Right.
I just gave you a case to show you the value of Ksuva would be useful the other way. That's all. But we're not learning that. I just did that to show you what her value to Ksuva. Now we're going to go to his value to Ksuva. So now you understand the Gemara now says, Kate said, show me. How do we apprise this value? It doesn't seem to fit into the wording. Okay. So now, two possible interpretations. Okay, so let's go through this. A Ksuva has two current market values. One for the husband's rights and another for the wife's rights. Now, here's the problem. What's the husband's rights over here? When a wife sells her rights, she sells the chance to receive the ksuva in case she is divorced or widowed or receive nothing if she should die before her husband. Since there's a significant element of risk in this, the ksuva is sold at a steep discount from its face value. Right? So let's say I said 100, so let's say 40. You could debate it maybe more. I'm just using 40 as a... Conversely, now what does the husband have? This is the new point. The husband can sell his right to the land designated for his wife's ksuva. In other words, when he gets married to her, there's a $100 ksuva. Want to know, where are you going to pay this off from if you divorce her? Well, I'll come up with cash. And what if you don't have cash? Just like if I borrow money from you, what if you don't pay me back? So you got to have property leaned against it. Okay, so when a husband's marrying this woman, now don't ask him what if he doesn't have property. It complicates things. Let's try to keep it simple. So now the husband has land that he owns that's designated that should he divorce the woman. Remember, if she divorces her, she becomes first creditor. What if a man dies? A man dies. He has to pay out a ksuva. He owes debts. And there's a whole bunch of things. So now what happens? Woman's first creditor. Woman's first creditor. What's she cutting against? His property. Okay. So now a husband has a piece of land for $100. Okay, sooner or later, or not, if the husband dies, it's going to be collected out of that property. Out of that property. But if she dies first, he never has to worry about that. Okay, now let's say the husband would like to sell that property while the wife's alive. So of course the guy's doing his due diligence, says, you're married, yeah? You're married. What's the ksuva? $100. Which property are you leaning against? Oh, this one I want to... sell you. Oh, wait a minute. You want to sell me? You're probably leaning against that. I ain't giving you $100 for that field. Okay, there's a risk. How much will you give me? Now, listen carefully. The market value, I'm just using vis-a-vis what her market value was. Her ksuva was 40. His will be 50. Why more? You'll see shortly. But just accept it right now. I'll explain it in a minute. So therefore, that should he ever become liable to ksuva, she will collect this land. But should his wife die before him, the land will remain the buyer's. Although the buyer assumes a significant risk this way as well, he's willing to pay more for the husband's position because two reasons. Because he receives the use of the land immediately. He's benefiting it from it now. The other case, when the woman's selling her rights, so he's got nothing. He put in $40, sees nothing. He can wait years and years, maybe eventually get 100 or get nothing. But the man sells the property right today. The guy's working on the land and he's getting money from it. So that's why it's worth a little bit more, even though there's a risk. While if he buys the wife's position, he receives nothing but the chance of eventual collecting. Furthermore, The husband's position is also more valid, that the buyer will not have to do anything to collect the property should his chance prove successful. In other words, the guy's buying the husband's property.
Right.
Now, what does he want to see happen? The wife die first.
Yeah.
Wife dies first, easy. He just keeps the property.
Yeah.
Now, let's reverse it. When you're buying the wife's entitlement to the ksuva, if the husband dies, what happens next? What happens next?
She gets the money.
She gets the money just like that?
Yeah.
Just like that. You walk right in, just like that.
Yeah.
No, you got to go and ask for it. It doesn't just automatically transfer from one account to another. She has to go and say, okay, I'd like my money. So the son says,
who does she say
that? Ah, that's a good question. Just start looking. Who's the heir? Go to the executor. Go to court. Put it in writing. Triplicate, please. You know, we're not so sure we owe you the money. Where's other thing? You know, it's not instantaneous. You got to take this to court. It's a schlep.
Yeah.
You understand?
Yeah.
In the other case where the guy buys the land, if she dies, he has to do nothing. He has the property, it stays her. Now she has to go from, get, you know, what happens when you buy something and, you know, you insurance? Yeah? Shelly, remember,
yeah.
You take insurance on trips, you have to cancel trip. Oh, you got the money the next day, right, Shelly? Right, next day. So, oh, put it right in your car. You just made it right up. How many papers did you have to fill? How long did it take till you got it? 6 months? Whatever.
Five,
you're dealing with a good company. Okay. But it's not, and it's aggravation, no? And if you don't do it right, you might not get it. So the same thing, the guy, I bought the wife's suva, now he goes to the children. So, well, you know, we'll have to see. We're very busy now and this and that, and we don't know. Maybe this. He will get it, but with aggravation. So you see why? That's a second reason why. If I got a choice to buy the husband's land or the wife's ksuvo, which would I choose?
Husband,
that's where you're going to pay more for it. So we've established. Right. So therefore, we'll just say, for the sake of argument, when you buy the husband's risk that relates to the divorce is worth 50. The woman's risk is worth 40, let's say.
Okay.
Yes, of course, but one has more value now than the other, and that's what's important. As an okay, I did the illustration right.
That's what you're gambling.
Now, as explained in the previous note, the simple implication of the mission is that the Zoman witnesses paid the value of her position. That was the simple meaning, but that doesn't make sense. This, however, cannot be the mission's intent, because the witness's plot was aimed at him, not at her. What the Mishnah may mean, however, is that we appraise the value of her position, namely how much a buyer would be willing to pay her for the chance to collect the ksuv in case she is divorced or widow. Now, this is the next critical step that the Mishnah assumed you know and didn't bother to say. And the Gemara is not even going to say. And this next step is missing, Mishnah, because he considers himself a... Now, listen to this. This is where you're going to get hung up here. Now, let's say the ksuv is 100. If she sells it, it's
40.
Now, the Mishnah says, subtract that amount, the 40, from the face value of the ksuva,
yes.
And that's what they're making the husband lose.
60. Oh, okay.
Thus, in the case of the illustration above, they jacked it up by 100,000%. The witnesses, they were doing with $1,000 ksuva, the way the art scroll. The witness would pay $1,000 minus 400 or 600 ksuva. So you're asking, why in the world is that? Where's that coming from? Here it is. The rationale for using this procedure is that had the plot succeeded, let's say they would have succeeded, and the husband pays out the $1,000.
Yes.
Question is, how much did they actually make him lose? The husband's out-of-pocket loss would actually have been equal to the entire sum stipulated in the ksuva. That's if it was true. But this is therefore what the zumpel should be. However, the worth of the wife's claim, what the wife could have sold it for, must be subtracted from the sum. Why? Because what if you have a husband who wants to hedge his bets?
Yes.
So couldn't a husband buy a wife's ksuva too?
Yes, he could.
Yeah, and he could say, you know what? I don't want the risk of paying out $1,000. I'm willing to pay $400 that I don't have to eventually ever pay any more. So a husband would pay right now $400 that he wouldn't have to pay the $1,000. So now how much did they really make him lose? Because he would always be happy to pay the $400. The wife's smart. She said, I ain't selling. She may not want to sell. But the husband is always willing to pay the $400 because he'd rather not pay the $1,000.
Right.
So therefore, however, the worth of the wife's claim must be subtracted from this sum because the husband would willingly pay the wife this consideration to relinquish her claim. Consequently, the amount corresponding to this sum cannot be considered as part of the loss he would have suffered because he would always pay that out even today. Foregoing is one option of slaying the Mishnah. Therefore, they want to make the... Remember, the always question, how much is making the husband lose? Yeah. Making the husband lose 600. Because he would have willingly paid 400. Yes. Even though nobody said anything. Yes, yes, yes. At any time, he could come up with 400 and get out of it. Right. So that he's willing to pay. So now that they lied, you can't say they made him lose 1,000. Because he would have paid 400. So they're making him lose 600. Right? Option two. Now you see what they did to the husband, not to the wife.
Right.
So they're saying we pay based on the value of the wife's ksuva, subtracted. That's a subtracted from the full amount of the ksuva. That's how much they make the husband really lose. Option two is explained in Mishnah as meaning that we appraise the value of his chance to the ksuva, meaning the amount that a buyer would pay him for the rights of land designated for ksuva, as we explained already. It's looking from his perspective on his land that he wants to sell.
Higher value.
No, it's going to be lower. And that it's higher for the ksuva, but lower because there's no difference. We do not, however, make them pay the greater amount of the ksuva's face value minus the value of his chance, except as suggested in the first opinion, because perhaps she would be unwilling to sell him her chance. Or he definitely could have sold the land designated for the ksuva, so that the witnesses would have caused him his loss by forcing him to surrender the land to the woman. According to this explanation, the Mishnah's words, how much a person would be willing to pay for his wife's ksuva on the chance that she'll be widowed, means how much a buyer would be willing to buy the husband for the land designated for the wife's ksuva when there is a risk that she'll be widowed or divorced, in which case the buyer will lose out. So in other words, we have two ways of looking at it. Do we look at it from the value of the wife's ksuva subtracted from the actual ksuva, which is $600? Or the husband's rights to the land that's leaned against the ksuva, how much he would get for that, right? And that's, we subtract that.
But he would get
and that's just how much he would have lost. No subtractions.
Yeah, but he would get
so
more.
It comes out, no. So he would get 500. If he wants to sell his land, he gets 500.
Yes.
If she sells her ksuva, she 400. Gets 400. What did the Adam Zoma do to the man? It depends what you look. If you're looking from what her value of her ksuva is, we look at the husband in relation to her. He would have paid out the 400. So how much did they make him lose by saying 1,000? 600. But when you look at the man's land, you say, look at the man would have got 500, higher than the woman, but the loss to the Reim Zomim is less, because they only pay out the 500. That's the two, that's the cases, and that's what the Gemara is saying. So now, Amar Rav Chisda, I explained it all now. Amar Rav Chisda, Bebal. We do it by the husband. In other words, the 500. We see what the husband would have lost out from his rights to selling the lien to the ksuva is 500. And Rav Nosson Bar Osha Omar, he says, no, Beisha. You look at it, the value of the woman's ksuva, subtracting the 1,000 from the 400 becomes 600. That's the machlokes. And Amar Rav Papa says, I agree with the second opinion. We go with the woman, but wait a minute, there was the 600. But what about the other things, you know, those other properties that you might lose? The Ishaf by the woman, ubiksuvasa, but only in regard to the ksuva. What about those other things? Nichse Malog, you might have made the guy lose all that too. The answer is, but that, you never know that that is what's there. In other words, when you say a man divorced a wife, you know there has to be a ksuva. There's no such thing as a man without... You knew. Well, the guy said, oh, we didn't even know he had to pay a ksuva. Why do we got to pay any money? We just said he divorced her. We never said he had to pay any money. Are you an idiot? A man does not cannot live with a woman without a ksuva. When you say he divorced her, you know you're taking away the money to ksuva. Then they say, well, you got to pay also for the land. Wait a minute. We didn't know there was land coming. That they have a legitimate thing. Even though there was... But that's what's written in the ksuva, that's written in the ksuva. But the land, so that's what Rav Papa is adding. So he says, I agree with Rav Nosson Bar Osha. You look at it from the woman's part, but only regarding the ksuva. We don't go to anything else because the other things, that doesn't necessarily have to have been. And we can't say, well, too bad. No, they intended clearly to make him lose the ksuva and not the other properties. And that's the mission. Now I think we have it clear. Tomorrow we start a new Mishnah.
If they knew that,
that could be different. Okay, I think it's much clearer now. Yeah.